From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gastina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org. And NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decisions to end sexual violence with the My Strength is Not for Hurting campaign, online at nyscasa.org.
Coming up this week, the State Ethics Commission releases its report on sexual harassment allegations against Assemblyman Vito Lopez. Our political observer, Alan Shartok, shares his thoughts on the report and its political ramifications and will reveal a hidden part of New York's population. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. The State Ethics Commission released its report this week on the sexual harassment allegations against Assemblyman Vito Lopez. Its conclusions have New York's National Organization for Women calling for a vote of no confidence against the still-serving assemblyman, who is insisting he's innocent. More now from the Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt.
The report, which contains many disturbing allegations against Lopez, had been kept secret while the Staten Island DA, Dan Donovan, said he was conducting a criminal investigation. Now, the district attorney has said there is not enough evidence to prosecute, though he says what he found was alarming. The Legislative Ethics Commission, under pressure from the State Ethics Board, has finally released the report. It concludes that Lopez violated the public officer's law. Among the numerous allegations are that Lopez provided money for young female staffers to purchase sexier clothing like short skirts and low-cut blouses to wear in the office. Lopez, while drunk, tried to kiss one of the young women, and he attempted to share a hotel room with two others on separate occasions while on business trips. He also put his hand in inappropriate places on their bodies when they drove in a car together. In one instance, Lopez requested a staffer administer eye drops for him. She later contracted pink eye. Lopez then gave the same woman $300 to buy herself a birthday gift. The assemblyman also coerced the women into writing regular complimentary text messages and letters to him, stating how much they enjoyed working for him and how much they cared about him. Lopez later tried to use the text messages against the women when he ultimately was accused of sexual harassment, saying they were proof that the women welcomed his advances. Sonia Osorio, president of New York's NOW, calls the report mind-boggling. She says the assembly needs to take further action against Lopez.
It's so clear by this report, if we didn't know it before, that Vito Lopez is not fit to serve office.
The Ethics Commission also chronicles the reactions of Assembly Speaker Sheldon Silver and his top staff to the initial complaints against Lopez. After the first two of the four women complained, the Assembly lawyers crafted a confidential settlement with them and paid them over $100,000. Members of the Speaker's staff voiced concern that if the details of Lopez's actions were made public, it would generate sensationalized news reports. They also discussed how much more money the Assembly might be liable for if the case ever went to trial, and they did not make the settlements public and did not refer the accusations against Lopez to the Assembly Ethics Committee or the Legislative Ethics Commission. After the secret settlement, Lopez hired two more young female staffers and harassed them in the same manner, according to the report. When they complained, the Speaker's staff did refer the charges to the Assembly Ethics Committee, and Lopez was sanctioned. It was not until the New York Times reported the existence of the first settlement with the first two of Lopez's victims that Speaker Silver admitted he had approved the deal and that it was a mistake to have kept it secret. Silver discussed the case earlier this year.
There are people who think there should be the right to have, on the part of victims, settlements that do not go public. because it will damage the careers of those people that complain.
The ethics report does not conclude that Silver or his staff violated the public officers law, but says the circumstances surrounding the secret settlement should be referred to the Assembly Ethics Committee. Asoria with Now says the report reads like a cover-up and a violation of the public trust.
The Assembly leadership did everything in its power not to engage in a proper investigation and diverted the victims to a secret settlement for the benefit not of them, but for the benefit of Mr. Lopez.
A spokesman for Silver released a statement pointing out that the Ethics Commission found that all of the Assembly's actions were lawful. Assemblyman Lopez, in a statement, called the report an all-out war against an ailing senior member. He says he's innocent and complains he was not allowed to question any of the witnesses. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Shartok. Alan, just heard a report from Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt about the State Ethics Commission report released this week on sexual harassment allegations against Assemblyman Vito Lopez. The details are quite disturbing, and it details a willful and prolonged mistreatment, I'm quoting, of his female staff. Some of this being attached to Assembly Speaker Sheldon Silver, who was involved in the negotiations over all of this. Some Republicans calling for him to resign. Lopez saying he's innocent. Just one more scandal in Albany.
Well, it is. And if you read the Ethics Commission report, it is not pretty reading. Look, I've been up and around the legislature long enough to know that there are men, there are women, that there are opportunities. People do this. This was not that. This is a guy, an old guy, you know, leaning into his female staffers, according to the tabloids, having a field day with this State Ethics Commission report. And, of course, the State Ethics Commission itself has not been garnering any kudos. So they saw this as an opportunity to sort of, you know, show a little muscle and that they were doing something. But, you know, it's the FBI that's doing all the heavy lifting on what's going on with our legislators who are less than perfect, and some of whom are criminal. Now, look, there have been investigations in this. Some people have said, some law enforcement people have said, that Lopez didn't do anything that was criminal. But we all know that what he did, if what we're reading is true, was reprehensible. And it is not attractive reading. And this is just another way in which power shows itself. And every once in a while, you'll see this in Albany. I remember a legislator who came to Albany and he fell in with a lobbyist, a very attractive lobbyist. His wife found out about it. He resigned. He went home. It's the way it goes. I remember a time when there was an assemblyman and he started an affair with an intern, and he got his tail feathers clipped also and ended up moving out of the state. So this is part of the way in which people are built, but you really got to be very, very careful, especially now. You have to do the right thing.
You had a conversation for your Capital Connection program this week with state editor of the Times Union, Casey Seiler. And one of the things that he noted about the corruption that's been happening in Albany was that perhaps the fact that a couple of legislators have now worn wires and gone to work for the authorities and the FBI, that this is a pretty good check on the rest of the lawmakers.
Well, it is, because, you know, there is this constant fear on their part that whoever they are talking to is wired. And so it cuts down on at least illegal communication, and you watch your words very carefully. What I find really hysterical is that some of them are actually complaining. Well, you know, we don't know who to talk to anymore, and, you know, that's just too bad. It is not only who you're talking to in the future, but what's bothering a lot of them is who they talked to in the past. And I'm sure they're getting up at night and turning over like spits on the flame, wondering about every conversation they had in the past with people who have been identified as being crooked. So that is going to be something that we will see in the future as this unfolds, because it will unfold. Clearly, there's more coming.
Well, there was an interesting article I saw. I believe it was the Daily News, Alan. And it isn't that we haven't heard this before, but former Governor David Paterson came out and said that people have been reaching out to him about running for Congressman Rangel's seat.
Well, he would be ideal. You know, there is a Harlem aristocracy, some of the most incredible people, and There is no question that Basil Patterson, former Governor Patterson's father, was one of them. And so what you have is all of this nobility. Now, Rangel wants to stay in there. But of course, Rangel deposed a guy who was supposed to be corrupt, and that's Adam Clayton Powell Jr., who has had a major street named after him subsequently, who really was a symbol of, you know, black defiance of white oppression to so many people, got elected overwhelmingly, and now his son is always trying to run against Rangel. So Rangel has some battle scars and has done some things which have been in the papers, we all know, which aren't so hot. And he's old. So it may well be that this would be a perfect time for Governor Patterson to come into this and run for that office. He would be very good at it. He's a wonderful man. I like him very much. He's funny. He's bright. And he would be a really good candidate. He's obviously throwing a trial balloon up right now and seeing whether anybody salutes. But it is more than possible that we will see this happen.
Something else happened this week, and it really was a big story, Alan. And I'm talking about the second longest serving mayor of Albany, Jerry Jennings, decided not to run again. Now, this leaves open two candidates right now, the treasurer of the city, Kathy Sheehan, a Democrat, and the other Democrat, a former councilman, Corey Ellis. Kathy Sheehan is white. Corey Ellis is black. And, of course, we know the history of Albany. It has been the sort of old boys cronyism network of people. And, you know, we now have a serious shakeup in the makeup of Albany. And to that, this week, the Albany County Democrats voted to endorse Kathy Sheehan. In the crowd were supporters of Corey Ellis. Corey Ellis stood up at one point and commented about how this is how we're treated. So this is a pretty big story and a symbol of some of the city politics that go on around the state.
Not only that, Albany is the capital of New York State. And clearly, Jerry Jennings, the outgoing mayor, had a very good relationship with Andrew Cuomo. And what that indicates is that there was a certain amount of business as usual that went on. If the sitting mayor needs something in the state capitol and goes to the governor, he doesn't always get it, but often he gets it. Now you have a progressive group of people coming up who have been slowly gaining power in Albany. They are a coalition often of progressives and people of color, and they take school board seats, and they took Kathy Sheehan's city treasurer seat. And as each of these victories have happened, obviously the handwriting was on the wall for Jerry Jennings. Now, nobody should put Jennings down and think that he couldn't have won. I think it would have been a hard-fought fight, but even in his last election, he didn't have the historic record numbers that he had had in the past. So it would appear that Jennings was able to see the wall. And now the question is, will Andrew Cuomo find something for this very talented man to do in his administration? Or will it be that it doesn't matter anymore, he doesn't need him anymore, and he doesn't do anything for him? We'll just have to see.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Shartok. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. New York State Senator Joe Griffo of the 47th District has launched an effort for residents to sign his new online petition urging the rejection of federal budget proposals he says would cost New York taxpayers billions of dollars annually. The Republican spoke with the Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas.
Tell me a little bit about this and you know, why you have done this.
Well, we're very cognizant of some of the fiscal challenges that continue to plague the country and our state. And as a state, we have been doing everything we can to ensure working with the governor to get an on-time budget done, to get a balanced budget done, to avoid new taxes. In fact, we have one of the lowest middle-class tax rate in over 50 years that we were able to implement. So we're being sensitive to the plight of New Yorkers and the burdens, the fiscal burdens that are placed upon them. So to think that the federal government now, who has really been not working well together and not being able to really tackle problems to find results for the American people, to now look at some of the new possible taxes that could impact New York, from Obamacare to the federal payroll tax hike. When you look at all of these things being pieced together, they could have a really severe burden on the taxpayers of New York. That will make matters worse. It could indeed increase taxes on an average to New Yorkers by about $4,500. We've always talked about the imbalance between what New York sends to Washington each year and what the state gets in return from the federal government. In fact, Senator Moynihan really got a lot of attention because he was the one who began that. We just want to make sure right now that the Congress and the administration are really working together to confront the problems facing this nation and not just trying to ignore things and point fingers, and then as a result of that, looking at a potentially $15 billion tax increase across New York, which could average at about $4,500 per taxpayer. So that is unacceptable at these fiscally disturbing and distressful times, and we're hopeful that they will get their act together.
We've heard a lot about Obamacare, a lot of scary headlines out there. Have your constituents in Central New York brought this to your attention? What are the concerns?
Well, there are a lot of concerns. One of it is about exactly how will it affect them, and many of them don't understand each and every aspect of the regulations, and some are still obviously evolving. So there's concern about what will it really mean relative to the scope of practice in medicine, as well as the cost that may be associated with that. So I think it's just some confusion, some general concern. But if you look at it right now from a tax perspective, as our Senate Finance staff has looked at, that it could increase taxes, you know, over $21 billion over 10 years. There's about a $65 billion increase in Medicaid cost. And then when you couple that with the federal payroll tax increase, that becomes very burdensome. And we've actually looked at the regional impact of these activities in Washington. In the Mohawk Valley, it would cost an average family about $2,300, and in the North Country, about $2,400 a year if all of these things went in and were left unchecked. And I think, again, it's really imperative upon the Congress and the administration to communicate and to find some common ground and to tackle the problems, not to point fingers at each other. And as a result of that, you're getting bad policies and budgets that have never even been passed. I don't know how long it's been since we've actually had a federal budget passed by both houses of Congress. So I think what we're trying to say is enough. The state of New York is struggling to take care of its own house, to keep it in order, and we've tried to do that, as I indicated earlier, by budgets being passed on time and balanced, avoiding new taxes, and we expect the federal government to be sensitive to the plight of the states as well as the economic woes that continue to exist across this country.
In your words, New York taxpayers are not an ATM machine for the federal government.
And we want to make sure New Yorkers make their voices heard and send a loud and clear message to Washington, D.C. that we cannot tolerate this type of inability and inaction to take on some of the problems that are facing this nation, and to do it in a bipartisan manner, and to do it to produce results. This is also about enough is enough. Get the job done. You've been elected to do. A lot of times you'll hear people complaining from the federal level at policies at the various states. But, I mean, this is really something that is significant right now. If you look at the inaction in Washington and the inability to come together to get things done, and as a result to see what the fiscal impacts could be on places like New York and particularly regions across the state like the Mohawk Valley and the North Country, it's unacceptable.
That's the Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas with New York Senator Joe Griffo. Senator Griffo's petition to oppose the double tax plan can be found at www.griffo.nysenate.gov. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina.
New York's farms employ about 60,000 people, and no one knows how many of those workers are here illegally. According to one estimate, 70% of the state's agricultural workforce is undocumented. The Innovation Trail's Matt Richman has this story on what life is like for a hidden part of New York's population.
Salvador is 32 years old and from the Mexican state of Veracruz. He's been in the U.S. illegally since 2008, working on a dairy farm 20 minutes from Ithaca. He didn't want to give his real name. Salvador lives in a trailer down the hill from his boss's dairy barn and works 6 days a week for up to 70 hours each week. When he needs to leave the farm, he pays for a ride from someone with a license. And he only leaves to do what he needs to, for grocery shopping or sending money to Mexico, then comes right back to the farm.
When you go out, are you worried about what might happen?
Sí, siempre.
Salvador first crossed the border in 2005, went back to Mexico after 2 years, and made the trip again in 2008. He says the walk across the border has gotten much harder. It took him 8 days. 2 of those days were spent without food or water. He had to pay 5,000 pesos to gangs along the way and was turned back once when the border patrol sent a dog after him.
Once a person gets here, it might be a month, 2 months, 3 months, but they'll find a job. The most dangerous part is getting here.
Lawmakers in Washington are considering an overhaul of the country's immigration system. The proposed legislation offers legal status to farm workers like Salvador, giving them what's known as a blue card, as long as they've been in the country since the end of 2011 and have spent enough time doing farm work. For those that still want to come to the U.S., the bill includes a new guest worker visa. The existing program, the H-2A visa, hasn't proved a viable alternative to illegal immigration. The new W visa would allow workers into the country for 3 years and let them move from one employer to another.
I can't explain well what the life of an American is. I haven't lived it.
Marta is another undocumented worker in the dairy industry who didn't want to use her real name. She lives with her husband and 4 kids on a dairy farm north of Geneva and arrived in the U.S. 13 years ago.
But it's different because my kids want to go visit places. They want to get out, but the police could stop me. And what would happen to my kids?
2 of her children were born in the U.S. and are citizens. Marta's been living on this farm for 10 years and works long hours, 10 hours a day, 6 days a week.
Do you get any sort of overtime?
¿Qué es eso? No.
Marta tells the story of her younger sister's death at the age of 18 in Mexico. She tried to send money but used the wrong name at Western Union and couldn't produce the right ID to fix the problem. Marta says she had to choose between seeing her sister and risking the trip back across the border or staying in the U.S. with her kids.
And those are the things that make you want to have your papers. It's not for me that I want my papers. I don't need my papers. So far, they haven't found me.
Even though she makes $7.50 an hour and her husband only makes a little bit more, they're able to support 4 kids here and family members in Mexico. Marta says they save all the money they can because they could be sent home tomorrow. But all that would change if they were given legal status.
The first thing I do is bring my kids to Disneyland. That's what I want to do, is bring my kids to Disneyland.
Marta says she tried to open a salon and buy her own car and house if legal status becomes an option. There are an estimated 11 million undocumented immigrants living in the United States today, more than double the amount in 1986, the last time Congress offered legal status. In Binghamton, I'm Matt Richman for the Innovation Trail.
Support for the Innovation Trail comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. You can hear more at innovationtrail.org. And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. Copies are available. Call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1320 or just listen or podcast on the web at WAMC.org. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org. And NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decisions to end sexual violence with the My Strength Is Not For Hurting campaign, online at nyscasa.org.